This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The stimulus escapes the Senate with 3 Republican votes. Now recovery goes to reconciliation. Still no Secretary of Labor, no nominee for HHS, and just 1 senator from Minnesota. It's Wednesday and time once again to count votes with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. We usually begin with a trivia question, but we're going to, do things a little differently this week. The House of Representatives has called a floor vote, and our guest this hour on the Political Junkie segment will have to go shortly to cast his vote on the floor, as he's done, well, for some years now. Last night at a reception in Statuary Hall in the Capitol, friends and colleagues thanked Congressman John Dingell for his long service in the House of Representatives. One of them, Congressman John Lewis, recognized Dingell for his dedication to progressive causes, including civil rights legislation.
When historians of the last half of the 20th century pick up their pens, they will have to write that John Dingell stood up for what is good, for what is fair, and for what is just. They will have to say that John Dingell made a lasting contribution to a nation at a time of great need and great opportunity. They will have to say that John Dingell was a great man, a great member of Congress, and a great friend of humanity. So I am pleased to stand here with you tonight, my friend, my colleague, and my brother, and to say thank you. John, thank you. Thank you.
That, of course, John Lewis of Georgia speaking at a reception for Congressman John Dingell. Today, he becomes the longest-serving representative in American history. If you'd like to talk with the Dean of the House, our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk at npr.org. John Dingell now joins us by phone from his office on Capitol Hill. Thanks very much for taking the time out to be with us today.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, and I'm sorry, the bells have just rung for a vote, and I'm going to have to run over the floor at about 10 minutes.
In about 10 minutes. Okay. We'll keep you
and
for 10.
I don't want to be discourteous, and I do apologize.
Well, that's quite all right. We understand you have other responsibilities. Remind us, 1955, your father, a congressman from the state of Michigan, dies suddenly in office. You're then 29 years old. Why did you decide to run for re-election in that special election in Congress?
Well, it took me quite a while, but Dad's friends pushed me, and I finally thought, well, if they want me to do it, I think I probably ought to. So I did. And I beat 22 people, but I was elected.
And you had worked, obviously, again, your father joined Congress, I think, in 1932. So you'd basically grown up in the House of Representatives.
Well, I've seen a lot of what's gone on in the Congress of the United States, with the exception of the years that I was going to law school, back home practicing law. In the Army, well, I've pretty much been in Washington at least half the year.
You were there as a page early on, and then you were there on the floor of the House of Representatives when Franklin Delano Roosevelt made his famous speech on December 8th, 1941.
I was, and it was a very, very impressive occasion.
What do you remember most about it?
About it? The solemnity of it, the unanimity of everybody who voted. There was only one negative vote, and that was a woman from Montana who voted no on both World War I and World War II and served only 2 terms in the House after she voted against both those wars.
President Clinton was speaking last night at the event in your honor in Statuary Hall and reminded everybody you served with 11 presidents. Obviously, they run the gamut. There's a lot of people in there. Who did you like the best of those 11 presidents?
Well, I think a lot of the current president. Barack Obama is, I think, doing just about everything right, and he gives every evidence of being an extremely smart, extremely decent, and extremely well-oriented president who is doing a good job.
You sound like a man who's getting ready to run for office again.
You mean I do or he does?
You do. Praising the current president who's been in office 3 weeks.
Well, I've praised and denounced presidents for a long time, and I don't find it necessarily ties into my campaign or not, although I got to say I have the misfortune of speaking frankly about presidents I like and admire and those that I don't.
As you look back, obviously your career is not over, but so far, what's the thing that you've accomplished that you would like to be remembered for?
Medicare. Full funding for the Clean Water Act that put $16 billion into the cleanup of our nation's rivers and streams. The Endangered Species Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, a bunch of Clean Air Acts that I've written. And a lot of wonderful constituent services that my staff and I do on things that are important but small but big to just ordinary Americans.
Your district is based around the city of Dearborn. The automobile industry has been absolutely vital to your constituents and, well, to the country throughout your entire term in office. Could you have ever imagined the situation that the Big Three find themselves in today?
Well, I couldn't have, but unfortunately it's here. But it's a worldwide thing. American auto industry is not the only industry that's in trouble or losing money. The Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, the Europeans are all seeing their auto industries not only lose lots of money, but require a lot of public money from governments to help them.
Well, we'd like to get some listeners in on the conversation, an opportunity to speak with the Dean of the House of Representatives, John Dingell. Today he becomes the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives in the 220-year history of that institution. Let's get Neil on the phone. Neil calling us from San Francisco.
Yeah, I'd like to know why you were demoted from the House, the chairmanship of the House Committee. Was it because you were trying to defend the automobile industry against the onslaught of the climate change and energy viewpoint, crusade?
Well, I don't have any idea. I'd like to know the reason myself. But the hard fact of the matter is I was attacked over my support of the auto industry. I was attacked over my handling of the global warming and climate change legislation, even though I had a piece of legislation ready to go this year, which would have met the complaints and the demands of both industry and the environmentalists.
You said you'd like to know why. I understand you had dinner recently with Congressman Waxman.
Henry and I talk.
Did you ask him why?
And we're going to work together.
Did you ask him why?
Well, I'm not sure that was a subject for discussion. Incidentally, fellas, I have 7 minutes remaining to get over to vote. I hope you'll let us conclude this discussion another time because I don't like to miss votes, particularly on matters as important as what's before the House now.
Could you take one question from Ken Rudin?
I'm sorry?
Could you take one question from Ken Rudin?
Yeah, but do it fast.
Do it fast. Congressman, for the longest time, every description of you for years ago was always that you were a bully and intimidating. Now you're beloved and revered. Did you change? Did Congress change? Did we all change? What happened?
I'm still the same John Dingell. The Congress has changed. I never have been a bully. I have asked questions that people find difficult and embarrassing. I insist on answers. That's one of my jobs as a member of Congress and as a person who is responsible to see to it, as part of my oath of office, that the laws are faithfully executed, the public money is well spent, and that the bureaucrats and the others who are subject to the laws carry out their proper responsibilities. I hate to say it, fellas, but I just got to go.
Well, another one of your jobs, obviously, to vote on legislation, so we'll let you go. Thank you very much.
Good day, gentlemen, and thank you.
Congressman John Dingell, our congratulations to him. Today, he becomes the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives. In the 220 years of that institution, Ken Rudin, that is an astonishing record.
19,420 days. He breaks the record of Jamie Whitten, a former Democrat from Mississippi, former congressman from Mississippi who served from 1941 until he retired in 1945. 1994. Longer than he and his father, I heard this, Steny Hoyer said this on the floor of the House today, John Dingell and his father, who was elected, as you say, in 1932, served together in Congress for more than one quarter of the entire length, the entire history of the 220-year history of Congress, a remarkable record.
And it is astonishing that the person who served longest ever in the House of Representatives is serving at the same time as the person who has served longest ever in the history of the United States Senate.
Right, and that's Robert Byrd. As a matter of fact, if you can't combine Robert Byrd's House tenure, which was from 1953 to 58, and his Senate tenure, Byrd has served in Congress longer than anybody, but as includes the House and Senate, both Byrd and Dingell. But Dingell's still sharp. You know, Byrd has been relieved as chairman of the Appropriations Committee.
He stepped down.
Right. They wanted to get a younger guy, Daniel Inouye, who's 84 years old. But Dingell is still sharp, and of course, he says he doesn't know why he was removed. I think a lot of the people felt that it was his championing of the auto industry and his objection to auto standards why Henry Waxman beat him. But it's interesting, if you listen to the tributes on the floor, the tribute last night at Statuary Hall where Bill Clinton and John Lewis and all those luminaries spoke, Nancy Pelosi, he's like revered and beloved. And yet, you know, anybody who followed Congress in the 80s and 90s were scared to death of John Dingell. So it's he says he hasn't changed. Perhaps he hasn't, but it's a remarkable career.
And he wasn't drawn on it, but it must have been a little ironic for him to listen to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, praise him last night in that event at Statuary Hall. Nancy Pelosi, of course, funded his opponent in the Democratic primary and worked against him retaining the chairmanship of his committee.
Right. In the Democratic primary in 2002, when he was merged with another Congresswoman, Lynn Rivers, she gave money to Lynn Rivers' campaign and also helped Henry Waxman beat him as chairman of Energy and Commerce. But again, you know, when it comes to celebrating an amazing record like this, I guess everybody's on the same side.
Well, Ken Rudin, stay with us. We're going to get back on track with the Political Junkie, the trivia question, and the week's political news coming up in our next segment of the Political Junkie. Stay with us. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. There is a lot to catch up with this week. In Louisiana, Senator David Vitter may go head-to-head with a porn star. Well, former eBay CEO Meg Whitman plans to run for governor in California. And as we mentioned, Michigan's John Dingell becomes the longest-serving representative in American history. We just talked to him last segment. Later in the program, six-word memoirs on love and heartbreak. Here is one, singles ad, double-wide, triple bypass. Send us yours by email. That's talk@npr.org. We'll be speaking about that later. But let's begin. Well, we're not beginning this week, but let's start now with our usual trivia question. Ken?
Okay, well, we just heard John Dingell. And of course, as we mentioned, he was elected to Congress in 1955, having succeeded his late father. There's an easy question and a hard question in the trivia question. Name the last two speakers of the House whose fathers served in Congress. The most recent one is easy. The previous one is much harder.
All right. So if you think you know the last two speakers of the House of Representatives who were preceded by their fathers.
Not preceded, but whose fathers served.
Also served in Congress. Not preceded as Speaker, but whose fathers also served in Congress. I'll get this question straight pretty soon. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Ken Rudin, the big news, political news of the past couple of weeks has been the stimulus package, which stumbled out of the Senate with three Republican votes, having garnered none in the House of Representatives. Now it appears to be racing through reconciliation.
Right. Probably will be passed by full Congress this week. The committee
Reconciliation Committee.
Yeah, it was a Reconciliation Committee. Reconciliation Committee meets today. It probably passed the House tomorrow. The Senate's on Friday, and then everything is fine and dandy. Of course, the Republicans still could decide to filibuster it. They need Democrats need 60 votes. They probably will still have those three Republicans, Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins of Maine and Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. And if they get that, then they'll get the vote passed. It'll be very interesting with Congress being off next week, what reaction the lawmakers get when they go back home. I suspect it will not be favorable. This is a humongous bill. We expect it to be like $790 billion. And it's interesting. Republicans, except for those three in the Senate I just mentioned, seem to be totally against it. Democrats to be totally for it. And I'm not sure if the American people really know what to expect. They certainly want it to succeed. They certainly want to have more confidence in their financial institutions and their economic future. But I think even as Barack Obama said in his magical mystery tour this week in Indiana and Florida and elsewhere, that we don't know if it's going
to
work.
Well, Republicans seem to have decided that this is a good political issue for them, that they can find their feet as a reborn as the party of small government. The president had some sharp words about that at his news conference on Monday night. Nevertheless, that they're not going to have to pay a political price for having almost unanimous opposition to, well, everybody accepts that the country's in a crisis.
Well, of course, if it succeeds, then it'll be the Democrats who justifiably will get credit for it. But it's interesting that many of these Republicans were very quiet during the 8 years when George W. Bush, the president, also had explosive deficits, tremendous spending out of control. And many Republicans only now with the Democratic president have gone back to their anti-spending roots.
Our trivia question this week, if you think you know the names of the last two speakers of the House of Representatives whose fathers also served in Congress, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Percy. Percy with us from Dayton, Ohio.
Yes, I believe one is Al Gore Sr. and, of course, John Dingell's father.
Well, actually, Al Gore, of course, his father, Senator and Congressman Albert Gore Jr.'s father, did serve in the House and Senate as well, but Al Gore was never Speaker of the House. We're looking for somebody who was Speaker of the House, whose father served in Congress.
And John Dingell was never Speaker of the House, a very powerful committee chairman, but nevertheless, thank you very much for the call, Percy. Let's see if we can go now to Bob in West Haven, Connecticut.
Yes. Hi there.
Hi.
My guest is actually going rather far back. John Quincy Adams and his father, John Adams.
They both served in the House of Representatives, but John Adams served in the House after being vice president and president. I don't believe he was ever Speaker of the House, and John Quincy Adams, I don't believe, was Speaker of the House either.
Oh, well. Okay,
but,
thank you
but
so
good
much.
Try.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Frank. Frank with us from Shepherdsville in Kentucky.
Yes, one of my choices has been knocked out, but would it be Congressman Boggs be one of them?
Hale Boggs of Louisiana.
Hale Boggs was a House Majority Leader, but and his wife served in Congress, so of course when he perished in that plane crash in 1972, but Hale Boggs was never Speaker of the House.
He was a member of the Majority Leader.
He was a Majority Leader, right. And Lindy
Boggs. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks very much for trying. Here's an email. This from Michael in Philadelphia. Is the answer Pelosi and McCormick?
Well, it sounds like a steak food restaurant, right? Exactly. Well, he's right with Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi's father was Thomas D'Alessandro, who served as a Democratic member of the House from Maryland in the 1950s, but not John McCormick. McCormick, the Speaker, in the early 1960s, after Sam Rayburn, his father did not serve in Congress.
Well, we're going to give
Pelosi's the easy one, and the other one is much tougher.
Nevertheless, we're going to give Michael the no prize for getting Pelosi.
Half a no prize.
There. One of these days, there's going to be a no prize.
I've heard rumors.
I've heard rumors to that event. Stay tuned. But if anybody thinks they know the other Speaker of the House whose father also served in Congress, well, you might get a double no prize this week.
One quick thing about John Dingell, who had to go off and vote. By the way, one of the things he has to vote on is H. Res. 154, which, quote, honors John Dingell for holding the record of the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives. The vote is going on right now. And I suspect it will pass.
And we should mention today is Dingell Day in the state of Michigan, so officially. Ken, President Obama held a primetime news conference Monday night. We saw a president who seemed obviously in command of the issues and the facts, but he was criticized on style points by a lot of people. Critics say, you know, this makes a difference when you're trying to persuade people to come along. The president seemed to have long, rambling answers, and in his opening statement, which a lot of people thought was too long as well, he seemed to be bouncing back and forth between the two monitors as he tried to read his statement.
Well, there is a difference, of course, between governing and campaigning, and we know that Barack Obama did a very good job in campaigning, and except other than that one week where he had, I think, had a pretty bad week, the week of Tom Daschle. And
last week.
I think he has a much better week. The question that was interesting most is that he spent a lot of time trying to woo Republicans, and obviously, as we said, he only got 11 Republicans in the House and only three, no, I'm sorry, he got no Republicans in the House and three in the Senate, and whether bipartisanship works. I think Barack Obama did what he needed to do. He made the case for inclusion, but ultimately I suspect that while he didn't get the 80 votes in the Senate that he would have liked, he still wants a flawed bill, an imperfect bill, rather than no bill at all. And so ultimately, if you're doing scorecards, I think Barack Obama had a winning week this week.
And while he was getting stonewalled by Republicans in Washington, D.C., he takes his act on the road to Florida, where he's supported by, well, guess who? The Republican governor of the state.
Right, Charlie Crist. And Charlie Crist said, look, it's not a political thing. That the states will benefit. Charlie Crist argues that they will benefit by this, and that the states desperately need this infusion of federal money. But it's interesting, in Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter, one of the three Republicans who voted for it, he has been condemned by his state Republican chairman, who denounced the vote. And I suspect that Specter, who barely survived a 2004 primary, and back then he had the support of President Bush and Rick Santorum, the other Republican conservative senator, this time he won't have their support. Specter could find himself in big trouble in next May's Republican primary.
Indeed. And what about the two senators from Maine, both of the two women from Maine? One has just been reelected. The other faces reelection.
Well, right. Olympia Snowe's not up until 2012. But again, those positions remain very popular in Maine. It's interesting, when you think of the Republican Party now, you think of the South, you think of the Deep South, maybe the Rocky Mountain West. You don't think of the New England, which, of course, no longer has one Republican House member. But yet, in Maine, it has two Republican senators.
Speaking of senators, Republican side, David Vitter, an unusual challenger to David Vitter in the Senate primary coming up in Louisiana.
Well, I don't know if it's unusual. First of all, it's a porn star. And as she said that her quote is, politics can be just dirtier, you know, not much of a dirtier job than what I'm doing. She is, her name is Stormy Daniels. She's 29 years old. I don't know why I know this. I really don't
follow this stuff at all. No.
I only read it for the articles. She's not announced a party. And of course, we've seen porn in campaigns before. Remember Lyndon Johnson all the way with LBJ? Come on, Neil.
Come on.
Right, exactly. But anyway, look, David Vitter, of course, he's best known because his phone number turned out on the D.C. Madam's client list. And so there is an irony and people are having fun with it. I suspect, though, that if he's going to have serious opposition, it won't come from Stormy Daniels.
Meg Whitman, though, could be a serious contender as she plans to run for governor of California.
Right. She is the former executive of eBay. And of course, eBay is perfect because now that we are buying senators in Illinois, we could, you know, buy governors. Arnold Schwarzenegger's numbers are down in California. John McCain did very poorly in the state, the worst Republican showing by any presidential candidate since World War II. Meg Whitman perhaps is the kind of Republican who could win. She has a pro-business background. I think that's what voters are looking for, less politics. But there's an all-star cast of Democrats lining up to run for governor as well. Jerry Brown, the attorney general and former governor. The mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villaraigosa. Gavin
Easy
Newsom.
For you to say.
Exactly. Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco. John Garamendi, the lieutenant governor of California. So there are a lot of Democrats that want it. And a lot of people suspect that after, I guess it's not completely 8 years, but 6 or 7 years of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Democrats feel that they can come back. Meg Whitman, of course, will have a primary opponent as well. But again, if the Republicans are going to do well in 2010, I think business acumen may be the best-selling point.
We still don't have a senator, only one senator, rather, from the state of Minnesota. What's going on?
Right. Well, Norm Coleman has gotten a state Supreme Court three-judge panel to agree to listen to 7,497 votes. He's going to make the argument that these are previously rejected absentee ballots and they should be counted. The court agreed to listen to the evidence. We probably will not get a winner or an announcement of winners until March or April. Some people think that the longer this goes on, the Senate may throw up its hands and call for a special election, a do-over. I suspect that won't be the case because it is a Democratic Senate, and right now Al Franken, the Democratic challenger, still has a 225 25-vote lead, although I believe he picked up 23 additional votes yesterday. So, I mean, he still has the lead. Coleman hasn't given up, but...
we'll have to see whenever this may work. Hilda Solis, the nominee for Secretary of Labor, yet to get a vote in the Senate.
Right. Republicans are... There's two things. First of all, a lot of people made a big stink that her husband was late in paying taxes. I think the real issue may be a ideological peak, that a lot of Republicans don't like the fact that she's pushing this check-off vote on unions to allow people to join.
It's a drama, but it's a real check-off.
Not a different check-off. I got it. But ultimately, I think she does get confirmed, but I think the Republicans are holding up the nomination, and a lot of liberal and labor groups are getting very upset about this.
And, of course, after Tom Daschle had to withdraw his nomination as the head of HHS and the new health care policy czar, still no new nominee from the Obama administration, though rumors about a senator from Maryland might get the pick.
Well, Barbara Mikulski's name has been listed along with the governor of Tennessee, Phil Bredesen, or I suspect will not be that. Howard Dean's name gets thrown out.
Dr. Howard Dean,
of course, but I suspect it will not be Howard Dean either. Kathleen Sebelius, the governor of Kansas, whose term limited in 2010, has been mentioned as well. It's still, again, not a complete cabinet, but they really lost the administration, even though we talk about indispensable people, and there are none, as Chuck DeGaulle once said, the secretaries are filled with indispensable men. Tom Daschle was probably perfectly suited to do this, but ultimately there was a populist rebellion against somebody who made so much money, didn't pay his fair share of taxes, allegedly a conflict of interest in his coziness with the healthcare industry. There were a lot of problems with that nomination.
Suspicion we may see two people, one as HHS and another one as a healthcare czar in the White House.
And Daschle would have held both positions had he been confirmed.
We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we've got some more brave souls who are going to try to answer our trivia question. The second-to-last Speaker of the House of Representatives, whose father also served in the House of Representatives. We got a correct answer earlier that the most recent, of course, Nancy Pelosi. Let's see if we can get the answer to the more difficult one. And this is Rich. Rich with us from Boise.
Hi. Was it Everett Dirksen?
Everett Dirksen did serve in the House and later in the Senate. He was a minority leader in the Senate, but he was never Speaker of the House.
Nice try, Rich. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to this is Rick. Rick with us from Lake Tahoe in California.
That's correct. I'm here.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Nancy Pelosi was the first one I heard you mention earlier. And was Thomas P. Tip O'Neill the other?
No, Tip O'Neill did not have a relative who served in Congress.
Much as he would have tried to elect him.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Let's see if we can go now to Judy. Judy with us from Sonora, California.
Hi. Is it Evan Bayh?
Evan Bayh in the Senate, and his father was, of course, in the Senate as well.
Birch Bayh, right. Of course, we talk about bipartisanship, and then you have Evan Bayh and Birch Bayh, but neither one served in the House.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. And let's see if we can go to, this is Barb. Barb with us from Damascus, Maryland.
Is it Henry Clay and James Brown Clay?
Well, that wouldn't be the last. I don't know about Henry. Of course, Henry Clay later changed his name to Henry Ali. Very few people know that. I'm sorry, Neil. But no, there's somebody far more recent. I'll give you a hint. It's the 20th century we're looking for.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Barb. And let's see if we can go now to Bill. Bill with us in Bay Village in Ohio.
Hi. Was Nancy Pelosi and William Bankhead in Alabama?
That is correct.
Ding, 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 ding. William Bankhead. Where did you get that answer, Bill?
I read a biography about Sam Rayburn, and I think William Bankhead and some other fellow from Tennessee died while Sam Rayburn was waiting to become Speaker.
Exactly. William Bankhead was almost immediately before Sam Rayburn, and Bankhead's father, John Bankhead, also a Democrat from Alabama, served in Congress prior to William Bankhead.
Bill, congratulations. Didn't even have to Google it. You knew it.
Yeah, I did.
Right. Thanks very much. We appreciate the phone call. Of course, there's a trivia question with us every Wednesday with the Political Junkie. Ken, as we look ahead, we anticipate now, all things being equal, that the stimulus package is going to get out of the House and through the Senate, the reconciled bill. This week, $785 billion in around there, dollars less than either the amount passed by either House of Congress separately. What is the next big challenge for President Obama, who had a whole lot of big ideas when he ran for president of the United States?
Well, of course, there's a lot of things, a lot of promises about pulling troops out of Iraq, closing Guantanamo, things like that. But I think ultimately it's the economy. stupid. Mm-hmm. And it's also the faith in the financial institutions. And if he can accomplish that, I mean, then obviously the Democrats are in good shape. But it's more than just Democrats and Republicans. It's really just the trust in the institutions have gone way down. Confidence in whether government can work has gone way down. And that's what's really on his plate.
Bankers from the big investment banks up on the Hill today being, scoured and beaten around the head and shoulders by members of the U.S. Congress. So they're taking their lumps today. Yesterday, the Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, introduced his bailout two, if you will, and got thumped on Wall Street. So right now, nobody's working too well. Anybody want to buy stock in a peanut butter company?
Well, exactly. I mean, you talk about, you could lambaste all these executives all you want, but look who's joined the administration. There's a bunch of people from Citicorp, a lot of people who may have been responsible, got away with a lot of the big buyouts. So it's not a pretty sight.
Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and Talk of the Nation's political junkie, here with us as he is every Wednesday. You can read his blog at npr.org. Just click on Political Junkie. Coming up just in time for Valentine's Day, six-word memoirs on love and heartbreak. Email us, talk at npr.org, and stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.